It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Monday, February 2nd, 2026. And y'all know what that means. It's Black History Month. It's also time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 368 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. My name is Lam, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm joined by my bestie, by my comrade in video game commentary, the Miggity 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 Mac, also known as Mac Shin. Mac, what's good, buddy? How you been?
Well, it's Groundhog Day. Again.
It is. I didn't even look. Did he see a shadow? I'm assuming no.
I believe whatever happens that means it's longer winter, I heard that that's what happened. So
okay.
I think that's when he sees his shadow, right? Is this more winter?
I believe so. I don't know, but I hope it's less winter. Well, I guess I'll go Google that later.
Yeah.
But what's new with you, man? Other than the groundhog, what you been up to, brother?
Man, not too frightfully much. Wound up being a little bit ill over the weekend. So mostly just stayed home and tried not to get anybody else sick. Although, nice guy, there is a special food that I prepared. We used to live in an area where there were a couple of different food options, like Cafe Rio, Costa Vida, you know, those sorts of ones. And unfortunately, those franchises don't extend this far west.
That is true.
And as a result, it's been a long time since I've had a real good sweet pork burrito.
Sweet pork barbacoa? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I have taken to, when I have a hankering, making it myself.
Ooh.
Started to really dial it in. So this weekend, even though I didn't do anything exciting over the weekend, just prepping a bunch of sweet pork was a real highlight to my week. And I promise, or at least I'll try and have some more interesting things going on next time we talk, because I'm planning on taking a quick trip up to Portland this weekend. So I'll report back if anything interesting happens. I'll see if I can't stop by a retro gaming store or something and come home with a little something something.
That is awesome, man. And I'm assuming you'll probably be going during the Super Bowl. Which means it's probably going to be packed, because there'll be a lot of nerds not wanting to watch the Super Bowl, but wanting to get retro video games instead.
I had not considered that.
Well, Mac, my weekend, awesome. One of my daughters, who plays basketball, had a basketball tournament up in the Green Bay area, a little south of Green Bay. So the whole team went up, we got a hotel, pizza, pool, hanging out, joking around with the other parents. They won two of their three games. I did hit a retro game store. Didn't see anything that I really, really wanted, man. So, as you know, the original Game Boy is my thing, right? I have the analog pocket, so I'm really collecting handheld stuff. Plus, they're small, so you don't have to, like, put them on a shelf. You can just kind of put them in a shoebox or whatever, and they don't take up a lot of space. Not a lot of games that I needed. I'm looking for, like, the European stuff at this point. I have a lot of the American stuff that I want. Uh-huh. They did have a couple games that slightly interested me, Morrow's Mission and Roland's Curse 2, but I was on the fence, decided to pass, but we'll see. Mac, more importantly than that, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that it's Black History Month, and one thing that I would like to do for, like, 60 seconds every episode is talk about, like, a couple either black businesses or black figures who I believe that people can support during Black History Month if that's something that they are so inclined to do.
Absolutely.
Today I have two. The first is an author that I'm a huge, huge fan of. His name is S.A. Cosby, and he has written many, many books that are crime thrillers. A lot of them take place in the South, African-American characters, very, very well written, very, very descriptive. Not very dense in terms of his writing style, so I really, really enjoy. And someone had once said that any of his books sound like they could be a mission from Grand Theft Auto. So there's like some intercept with our audience and what you might be interested in. I read his book, King of Ashes, last year. I recently picked up Blacktop Wasteland. Phenomenal, phenomenal books. If you like his books, or that style, I should say, please go support him. The other is a comedian who I've been watching a lot of lately. His name is Mike E. Weinfeld. Goofy style. I wouldn't say as nerdy of a style as me. Like, he's probably a little bit cooler than me. But, like, the type of guy who I would hang out with and seems like he'd be really down to earth, but super funny, really, really good writer. I believe he actually has a dry bar comedy special, and he's been in, like, some small movies as well. Big afro. Like, I was watching one of his clips earlier today, and he started his set off saying, you guys are probably thinking, what a sexy looking microphone. Because he has a huge afro. Like, just that type of humor, right? So go check those two people out, and we'll have more for you next week. And Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do. Oh, go ahead, man.
I've got one more to throw out there, Mr. Nice Guy.
What is it? Yeah.
I was not prepared, but when I went to Worldcon in order to support my spouse who was presenting there last year, I got to sit in on a bunch of presentations that Niecy Shaw did. And she's a fantastic Black author. I really can't speak highly enough about Everfair. And as a person, charming, engaging, so friendly and warm. And, you know, just felt as you were sitting in the audience listening to Niecy Shaw talk about things like the future and what the future could be like, you couldn't help but feel a lot of hope for the world.
That's awesome.
Shout out to Niecy Shaw. More stuff next time.
I didn't tell Mac I was going to do this, right? It's 50% my podcast, it's 50% his podcast. We surprise each other. There's never a need to, like, ask for permission. We just come with ideas. Well, cool. On that note, Mac, I say we do what we do best. We hop right up in that gaming news. What do you think?
Let's absolutely do it, Mr. Nice Guy. What is new in video gaming?
So, so much. And let's start off with a story about Disney, one of Mac's favorite companies. By the way, this is episode 368 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. This is from GameSpot.com, written by Eddie Mackick. Here is what Eddie writes. The Walt Disney Company could vote on its next CEO soon, and the person considered to be the top candidate for the job, Jason D'Amaro, is the person spearheading the Disney X Fortnite project and the executive who wants to do more with gaming overall going forward. We're going to skip the comments on the old CEO or the current CEO because they're not that important relative to the story. But this article goes on to say a report from Bloomberg stated that D'Amaro is indeed the top choice to become the next Disney CEO. Disney, however, is not confirming anything at the moment. Quote, the board has not yet selected the next CEO of Walt Disney, blah, 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 blah. D'Amaro started at Disney all the way back in 1998 and rose through the ranks, becoming the current chairman of Disney Experiences. This sprawling business unit runs theme parks and cruise ships, as well as consumer products, including video games. In that role, D'Amaro is leading the effort to grow Disney's presence in video games, in part through a $1.5 billion investment into Epic Games for a Fortnite project. It was previously reported, Mac, that D'Amaro wants to give video games a bigger role at the company, and the report said that D'Amaro is also looking to integrate gaming technology into Disney's creative processes. So this is super interesting to me, and to, like, clarify, when we think Disney, we're not just thinking Disney characters. Disney owns Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it's relevant to video games, but they own ESPN. Like, Disney has their hand in a lot of different things. Thoughts of gaming being more prioritized by Disney. What do you think?
I'm very hesitant to say that it's a good thing. One of the things that I have done in the past in research for the show is to try and nail down the shift of video games from you've bought this software and there's a warranty for a certain period of time to the you don't own anything written down in the terms of service. It seems like some of the earliest warranty and legal info that I can find from video games are the games from Disney themselves or published by Disney that really pitched the you don't own anything, this is a limited license to a software when you bought a video game. So I'm very skeptical about Disney being more involved in video games precisely because I don't trust them as a company to respect the customer very well. I do trust that they have some incredible visionaries in entertainment and in art. We wish we could have one that without the other thing.
Sure.
But I just can't help but feel like Disney as a corporate overlord is particularly egregious at not being cool, man.
Okay, so you're concerned about like pricing of stuff and like go ahead. Help me understand.
Consumer friendliness generally, as well as friendliness toward frankly anybody. I also get a little bit leery about Disney's constant growth into more and more and more spheres. Like, I didn't want Disney to buy Marvel. I didn't want Disney to buy Fox. I didn't want Disney to buy, you know, I didn't want them to be everywhere. Because if Disney does something I don't like,
sure,
then I can conceivably not buy a Disney product. I can vote with my wallet, but if Disney has an owning stake or some stake in everything, I can't escape giving Disney money if they start doing things through market forces. I can't stop giving them money that I don't think I should have to give.
It's harder.
Way harder. Like, I can't watch Andor because I canceled my Disney, you know, Plus subscription, for example. You know, things like that.
Sure.
Art is not really fungible. The art is really not one-to-one transferable. That is, I think, particularly pronounced, not being able to have access because art really isn't one-to-one transferable. You know what I mean?
That's fair. And I would agree with like almost all of what you're saying, maybe not for the same reasons. There's parts of what you said that I disagree with. I don't know how I feel about the consumer friendliness, although I will say it's interesting that the first example that's given in this article is about them partnering up with Fortnite, which I believe we've talked about Epic Games certainly many times on this podcast and some of the lawsuits simply regarding things like terms of service and, you know, potential predatory practices towards minors in terms of pricing and not being able to get money back that they spent, you know, using credit cards and all that, all this stuff, right? The microtransactions, all of it. Here's what I like about this. I like that there's going to be someone who is the head of the company that actually is aware of video games and that wants to be a part of them. Because a lot of times, Mac, with these IPs, what stops them from getting a video game is the licensing issue, is the negotiation that could potentially break down where they say, we want to use Captain America, and Disney says, okay, well, if you want to use Captain America, you're going to give us $10 bajillion, right? Now, maybe instead of it being $10 bajillion, it's $10 million or $1 billion, right? But someone who actually cares about gaming is more likely to allow that licensing negotiation to take place at a reasonable level or a less ridiculous level. So I like that, right? It's kind of like when you go from having someone who's super old school in charge of that to someone who's a little bit more young and hip and gets it, right? It's more likely that we can get some good content there.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah, howdy do, fellow kids.
Yeah, right? What I don't like is I don't like the fact that he felt the need to say it out loud. I think just do it. I don't think that everything needs to be made into a video game. And on the one hand, it's great to have someone who can negotiate and who wants these things to be made. On the other hand, it could result in an oversaturation of Disney products being put into video games. So it's a thin balance as a CEO to walk the line of allowing your IP to be used without allowing it to be oversaturated in the market. And then us getting video games that suck, like, you know, a Superman 64 or even like the Avengers game that was made a few years ago where it's just not good. And then the support drops. And then the next time that a game comes out like that, we're really, really skeptical about it. Because we know that you aren't giving it to someone who, or to a studio that really is going to do their due diligence. So those are my thoughts. Maybe that's middle of the road, but that's how I feel.
You know, we do have a wild thought presented live in the chat. Galvatron, who's with us, actually sees this as a desperation play.
Ooh.
Now, I'm not going to opine on whether or not these are accurate, per se. However, Galvatron cites that Marvel and Lucasfilm are declining, and other than Zootopia 2, their animation studios have been on a losing streak, while attendance at their theme parks is down. And to him, that means, he says, they're really desperate if they're looking at video games. And that's an interesting take. I can't speak to any of those individual components, But it is an interesting bit of tea leaf reading.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, yeah, when a section of your business is down, you try to find revenue elsewhere. I don't interpret this that way at all. I simply interpret this as gaming is a big thing. We're already in the space, but let's make it more of a priority. Now, one other thing, he mentions the theme parks. It actually made me think that the CEO, the new CEO, may want to incorporate video games more into theme parks. When we went to Universal Studios, one of the rides we went on was this Men in Black game, or Men in Black ride. And one of the things that you did on the ride is you're like shooting aliens with this little thing, with this little controller. And at the end, it gives you your score, and it gives you your score compared to everyone else. Now, how cool would it be to have like a better version of that incorporated into some of the rides? And I think that maybe there's that possibility when we talk about more gaming being incorporated into Disney stuff. So I'm excited for that possibility.
Yeah, could be fun.
Yeah, thank you for your thoughts. Let's keep it moving. Let's move on to another news story. We may just do one more today. And one of them, Mac, is about AI. One of them is about employee getting fired for speaking out against public... speaking out publicly against his company, gaming company. What do you think? Which one? AI or guy speaking out? What do we want to talk about?
Let's talk about the guy speaking out.
So this is on Kotaku.com, written by Zach Zwizen. Here is what Zach writes. Ubisoft Montreal lead David Michaud-Cromp has been fired just a few days after he was previously punished for publicly speaking out against the company's plans to force all employees to return to the office. Last month, Ubisoft ripped off the Band-Aid and announced a massive corporate shakeup as part of its Tencent-funded bailout. The restructuring led to multiple game cancellations, including the long-in-development Prince of Persia: The Sands of Time remake, as well as more layoffs. Another part of the plan that Ubisoft wanted was for all employees to report to their local office 5 days a week. We're not going to read this whole thing, as always, but... Oh, and of course, you know what? It starts to reload. Many Ubisoft developers weren't happy about this big change, including Ubisoft Montreal level design lead, team lead. Oh, are you kidding me? All right, Kotaku, if we're going to use your site can't be crashing as I'm reading it. I think it's just that there's so many ads on this site. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. Dude, there are a bunch of places like that as well for me that I'm like, look, I want to spend time on your site, but you got to be more judicious with those ads.
I see like a newspaper ad like trying to get me to subscribe. There's videos on here. It did it again. So back, Mac, bottom line, this guy, he complained about the policy on LinkedIn publicly on January 23rd. Article says 5 days later, he posted on the site that he was being punished by Ubisoft for his comments and was given a 3 days of unpaid disciplinary suspension. And now he's been terminated. Mac, I don't even want to get into like, is his opinion... What I don't want to get into is like, should he have been fired or not?
Okay.
We can talk about that a little bit. More what I want to talk about is like, do you feel that he is right or do you feel that he is wrong in relation to video game production, video games being made, and employees who work on video games being required to return to office? Like, is that something that we think is necessary for a game to be made? Is it something that he may have a valid opinion on and say, no, we don't need to be there? Like, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, just on generally, I know that most of the indie games that, for example, we see are almost always made by people where there is a team, and it's not just one person. The team is usually distributed, and they're usually doing it from their own places. And those tend to produce very good outcomes. We had very visible experiments for years of people doing their work entirely remotely, in a lot of cases exclusively remotely for a period of time in 2020 and 2021. And sure, as far as I'm familiar, the literature says that those were overwhelmingly productive times, and that people who were permitted to work remotely did so very, very well. Unless your return to office is a vehicle for a soft layoff, I don't see any value in Return to Office, unless you want it as cover to lay off people that you don't want to have the public heat for laying off.
Yeah, so yeah, I get what you're saying, and you dodged my question a little bit because we're talking like specifically about video games here. So I'm curious, like in specific, like into game development, do you think that he's like right there about them not needing to be there?
Yeah, I think he's definitely right.
Okay. I'll share a couple examples. I'm sure we have comments in the chat too. And you know, 368 episodes in, I can't remember if I've ever shared these before. So someone who's listened to all of them, let me know. So when I was a kid, I went to this like nerdy summer camp. It was like a week or 2 weeks long called Odyssey of the Mind in the Seattle area where I grew up. And we did all these different like experiments and different projects and learned about stuff. One of the things we did, Mac, is we had this project where we had to put these diagrams together and color them and paint them and paste them and cut them and all of this. And they said, we're going to do this two ways. Number one is we're going to have one individual make all of the parts themselves. You're going to cut, you're going to paste, you're going to glue. You're going to do all the stuff, right? The other option is we're going to have an assembly line. We're going to have everyone do their individual part, and we're going to see which one gets done faster. Mm-hmm. Mac, I'm curious, which one do you think got done faster?
Well, obviously, I think I would have expected that the assembly line would have done it. However, you haven't said how old the kids were, and whether or not there was a critical paste-eating debacle.
Right. Were these safe scissors, or were there injuries, right? These are all details that I left out. Mm-hmm. So, first of all, I think we were old enough to be competent to make things on our own and not eat paste.
Dude, right? I am darn near 40, and I wouldn't say I'm competent to make things with paste, so...
You know what? We all mature at different speeds, dude. It's all good.
That's fair.
It's all good. But yeah, it's, I mean, to your point, like, what happened is those who were in the assembly line were able to get things done faster. When you're able to focus your mind on your task without the distractions of doing things that you are just okay at or that aren't part of your job. You know, when you're not a jack of all trades and you can focus on that, things go smoother. And that may not be the best analogy, but I do think it applies to video game making. If you're a voice actor or actress and you're able to sit in your home, use a microphone like this that I have here, but much higher quality, and record your voice and then be done, you can probably get it done faster. You can probably concentrate better, and your performance may be better. Now, if I'm playing objective here, being around great talent can also make you better, right? It raises your ability when you're around other talented people. It can also be very, very distracting. So I see both sides of the argument, but when it comes to game making, I sincerely believe that all of those people who are capable of working at home and who don't need the collaboration, which is actually kind of exaggerated a lot of times by people who are paying for these big buildings and want you to be in them, I think that you can get a lot more done at home, or that you can at least get a lot more done with and have more peace of mind and not have to pay for parking and gas and and deal with all the politics that sometimes come in different office environments, I'm told. So for that reason...
I've been told. My friend. I'm asking for a friend.
So I think, you know, number one, nothing that you say is private, kids and adults who listen to our pod. Learn that lesson right now based on what happened to this gentleman. But number two, I think video games could have been done remotely. A lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, Mac, that's been our news for the week, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic news, dude. And now I'm excited to take us on a little step into the past. Mr. Nice Guy, we have had some absolute bangers come out in years before. And I just want to focus on a quick couple of them. I'll start with 1998 for the PS1, a little game called Final Fantasy Tactics, a game that I love. I gush about it almost every time we come around this time of year because I think it is fantastic. Good story, all dark themes, but also definitely a story where the world kind of goes on without you. You know, you are caught up in stuff a lot bigger than you. And even as you as a character grows, there's this type of power fantasy that happens in most video games, really in most a lot of media. The power fantasy of you grow, you get stronger, and then you beat the game or you beat the villain or what have you.
Yeah.
But in Tactics, it was very much even while you're getting access to these incredible spells and you're growing and you're leveling up, the rest of the world is still very much pushing back on you in meaningful ways. You're being challenged not just by single enemies, but by whole organizations that, as powerful as you might be, they are still more powerful. And at the end, spoiler alert of the game, it turns out that your character winds up being kind of like this footnote that never really is recognized for his contribution in history. The opening line of the story is this old dude who's going through a bunch of paperwork, and he's just like, oh, who's this guy named Ramza who apparently, like, I've never heard of, nobody's ever heard of him in history, but, like, apparently this dude was a heretic, and he did all these things for which he was punished by the church, and, like... And so the story is essentially, he's like, okay, now I've finally dug up this secret history, and this dude almost saved the world, or, well, did save the world, but we've completely forgotten about him. And so there's a certain tragedy that overshadows the whole game, kind of plays against the usual power fantasy tropes that that I think is really satisfying in the game. And it's very direct up front about how this is not a story of you win at everything. It's a very sad story about how even when you win, you lost. I know that maybe that might not appeal to a lot of people, but I think the storytelling is quite good, and as a tactics RPG, it is peak. But that's enough about Final Fantasy Tactics. Mr. Nice Guy, another couple of games. I'll jump forward in time a little bit to 2017 with a game called Alwa's Awakening.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a delightful game. You've played it, right?
I have. It's been a minute. I think I got it as part of a Humble Bundle. But, I believe, if I'm remembering right, like 16-bit graphics. Just like a good-looking, fun, feel-good game. Not like ridiculously challenging. Bright colors. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, samesies. And also one of the things that was really fun about it was that it was made in such a way that it was meant to evoke a little bit NES Plus type of sensibilities. But somebody did wind up making a demake that would play on the NES, but still maintained all of the qualities and things. And yeah, and it's an incredible piece of software engineering. The original, fantastic, and then the demake, even more incredible. And then last one I wanted to talk about, Mr. Nice Guy, today would happen to be a title released for modern consoles in 2018, a game we know and love, started off as a game jam game where they made it in a sort of, you know, 48 hour period.
Oh, nice.
And that is Celeste.
Oh, yeah.
One of our favorites of all time.
Yeah, I wonder if I was to go back and see how many times we've talked about Celeste on this podcast, it'd be a lot, because it's such a good, it's just a gem, right? Definitely in my top 10 indies of all time. And one of the cool things about Celeste, there are Easter eggs referenced to old games. There's a Super Mario 3 Easter egg that I won't spoil in case you haven't played it 8 years later. But also, the person who makes Celeste, Maddie, I think it's Maddie Makes Games, very, very passionate about game making, like to the point that they made some levels for Super Mario Maker in Celeste style. And when someone does stuff like that, it's very clear to me that they are just passionate about what they do. It's not all about the money. Celeste can often be had for between $2 and $5. So if you have not played it, please, please buy it. Fantastic game.
Absolutely agree. 10 out of 10. You cannot go wrong with a playthrough of Celeste. And I do want to also throw out there that there is a particular moment in the game that stuck with me just for ages. And that's at this sort of transition between two different levels, and you need to, like, breathe with a, you know, with a feather as the main character is going through a sort of anxiety attack. And, you know, I think we certainly say that really video games, you know, art is something that makes you feel something, and video games can absolutely do that. But I loved how very caught up in that moment I got in that, you know, frankly, breathing mini game, you know, because I invested myself fully in that moment. And it's just little fun moments like that in the game that there are a lot of that were quite pleasant. But anyway, that's all I have to say about Celeste, but also what I have to say about this week in years before for video game history.
Well, thank you for that, Mac. And now it's time for our topic of the week, a segment in game or a segment in the podcast where we talk about something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it. And Mac, I'm excited for this. It's something that we've talked about before. Like, I'm big into VR. I like VR a lot. We've talked about modding before. We've talked about lawsuits before. And all of that stuff kind of comes together in this news story. Shout out to the real Kingler99, friend of the show. Mac and I went to Midwest Gaming Classic with him last year. He is the one who sent this story to me and wanted to hear our opinion on it this week, Mac. So this is on PCGamer.com, written by Lincoln Carpenter. Here's what happened. And by the way, this was written January 23rd. So this happened a little while ago. Last week, creator of the popular paid access Cyberpunk 2077's Real VR mod, Luke Ross, found himself at the center of a growing controversy after receiving a DMCA notice from Cyberpunk developer CD Projekt, which claimed the modder was profiting from its IP. The studio had earlier requested that Ross make the mod free to download, but rather than submit to what he called ironclad corpo logic, Ross instead made the VR mod unavailable. Now, after receiving a second DMCA from a different publisher over his VR mod for Ghost Runner, Ross has opted for the nuclear option and removed access to all 40-plus of his VR mods from his Patreon rather than distribute them for free. Mac, had you heard about this story before now? Just curious.
No, no, keep it coming.
Quote, due to the DMCA notices received from CD Projekt SA and 505 Games, I am forced to temporarily pause the Patreon page, says a disclaimer on the About You page of Ross's Patreon. You can still subscribe if you want to support me, but be advised that for the moment, there will be no benefits available, no access to the 40-plus mods or detailed information on my VR conversions until legal situation clears out. Now, Mac, here's the interesting part, and I'm trying to find it because I really want to report on this accurately. Let's start there.
Okay.
He made these mods. He got a DMCA. And so rather than make them free and give them to the people, he said, you know what, I'm just going to take my ball and go home.
So real quick, I guess I am a little bit lost because normally when somebody gives you a DMCA, you don't have the option to release something for free. Your option is expunge it from the internet and don't distribute. That's usually, so I might have missed you saying it, but...
Yeah, that was what CD Projekt Red insisted. They said that he's profiting from use of our IP, and they asked him to make it free.
Wow.
Instead of charging.
That's like...
So let's start there. What do you think about that approach?
I think I'm... Am I in love with CD Projekt Red now? I better tell my spouse.
I already was. I liked Cyberpunk. I like The Witcher 3.
I really haven't played much of CD Projekt Red's games, but that seems to me to be a very even-handed approach to something like that, because in my mind, right, you're getting a DMCA takedown because you're doing something with the intellectual property that somebody else made, and you do not have their permission to do something, to do whatever you're doing with it.
Sure. Sure.
And so the DMCA is usually, hey, that's our intellectual property, take it down. But to be like, hey, either you can keep it up if you give it for free, but you can't paywall stuff that exists because of our work. You know, it's like your fan fiction gets to be up for free, Or, well, maybe that's not quite a thing, because fanfiction's a lot more transformative than a VR mod, I would say. But, point being is that, yeah, that seems like a pretty even-handed approach in my perspective. But maybe I don't realize what it is. Yeah, maybe there's something I'm not seeing about it.
Well, I think part of the, and this is me reading into what you're saying, because I've known you for a long time. I think that maybe, Mac, part of the reason that you're okay with this is because we have, over the years, seen so many examples of Nintendo going really, really hard in this situation. Mm-hmm. Like, not only saying, take it down, but saying, like, by the way, you're going to pay for every instance of this that you sold.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, or every potential sale that you made us lose. And then the reason that they are often doing that is because they already had plans to put out a Mario Galaxy remake. And mm-hmm. the one that you made, Modder Online 1922 or whatever your name is, was really good. And we knew it was going to take attention away from what we're doing. So that's the number one. Number two, I don't know that I'm in love with as in love with CD Projekt Red for this approach.
Oh, okay.
Because they're effectively saying you made something that's good enough that it got our attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally going to result in the sale of more copies of our game, potentially, right? Because now not only can you play the game on a flat screen like we designed it, but now your mod allows people to play it in VR, but probably they have to own a copy of the game to do that. So you can leave your mod up. It's going to result in us getting more money, but you cannot charge for that mod. And so that's where I think it's a little bit selfish. I have to take a different view than you here. I mean, what if he was charging like $1 for it? I don't know what he was charging. Would they have been mad then? Is it how much he was charging? Is it the fact that it was bad? Obviously not, because they said you can leave it up. It wasn't like they said cease and desist. They just said make it free.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an issue with that because it would result in them getting more profits.
It's interesting. Now,
go ahead.
Oh, no.
I was just going to say part two, and I'm trying to find the source for this, is that apparently, even though he took it off, there's people who have access to those mods, right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone still had these on their PC because people had downloaded them. And so what I have heard and what Kingler99 had wanted us to talk about is the fact that many gamers are now pirating his mods without his permission, obviously, because he took them down. But you can obviously use programs once you have something to seed it and make it available to other people. So how do you feel about the gaming community's alleged, because I can't find that quote, response in going after him that way?
In going after him that way?
Yeah, he got a DMCA. They're upset that he took down the mods because they were good. And so they're saying, you know what? Screw you, buddy. We're gonna pirate this stuff that you made.
On the one hand, he had to take all the assets from the game, unless he made his own assets for the game.
If I could give some clarification here, and this is absolutely where the reporting is frustrating, because it doesn't quite explain this, but there's a chance, Mac, that he actually didn't actually like mod the whole game, but that he made a program that is capable of making games available in VR, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So it can look at the programming of the game and say, let's make this VR, and then it does it. Maybe he cleans it up a little bit, but maybe he didn't take the assets. Maybe he just made a general program that can do that. It's a possibility.
My mind immediately goes to something like the Game Genie.
Right.
Something that sits in between the end user and the game data itself.
Yes.
I think this man needs to, use that as a software that he sells. And, well, I mean, arguably, in a way, he was selling it through his Patreon. I don't know, nice guy.
Right on time, Mac, because, you know, I did find the article that says, people are pirating it to punish him for breaking CD Projekt Red's terms of service, which is interesting. It speaks to just how beloved CD Projekt Red is. And in terms of being lucrative, this article on IGN set by Wesley Yin Poole says, Luke Ross, creator of real VR mods for games such as Elden Ring, Days Gone, Far Cry, reportedly earns $20,000 a month through Patreon, which acts as a paywall for his work. So yeah, he was making pretty significant money.
I don't know. You can't live off $20,000 a month.
I don't know, man. Yeah, $20,000 a month. That's wild. It says he extended his VR conversion framework to support Cyberpunk 2077. So it does sound like it's a VR conversion framework. Which, very, very interesting, Mac. This is a whole podcast episode. We have limited time. Anything else you want to say to wrap this up? I've said my thoughts.
Yeah, I will say, I think, nice guy, I think you've convinced me. I think I lean more towards his side of things in this case. So, yeah, I'm so glad that that Kingler wanted us to talk about this.
Yeah, and that, you know, for the sake of time, that has been our topic of the week.
Well, Mr. Nice Guy, let's turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart, of course. And I'll drop a link into the chat and we can talk about this game out of a studio in northern Utah, a newish game studio called Deseret Games Studio. It's a tactical RPG with pixel art characters and more sort of voxel slash 3D based world. I am always, whenever I say this, I always feel like I'm saying it wrong. I think it's Aegis or Aegis Force?
I'm pretty sure it's Aegis.
Aegis, okay. Aegis Force, the Saurian War. Anyway, if you're interested in this type of a game, what they're asking is a $20 minimum buy-in for the game, with the expected release to be in August of this year. So we're, you know, only about 6 months out. Now, there are higher tiers of support that include things like an expanded demo that's playable later in this year, or even a few extra bucks gets you like a pre-release of 3 days before launch, which is an interesting project and prospect as a thing there. Now, the goal that they set for themselves was only 2,500, which is not a lot of money. And with a team that is 6 people, that's a small team, but 2.5 is even less money for 6 people. And that delivery date, just, you know, about 6 months away. Yeah. So there's a lot going on here, and there's a lot to say. I think the Kickstarter itself suffers from at least one, you know, problem that I can see, and that is that normally the video plays right at the top, but it doesn't have that. It just has kind of an image, and then you scroll down for the video, which is a little jarring because that's kind of what we've come to expect from there. It is a brand new studio, more or less, founded in 2024, so it hasn't been doing it that long. And yeah, now, not to give too much away, but it does have a playable demo that you can try out, so you can at least see if what they're doing is of interest to you. Mr. Nice Guy, any thoughts, my dude?
Yeah, I mean, the price is the biggest issue here.
Mm-hmm.
As I scroll through this, it looks like they want to get it on Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, and Steam. And I just can't help but think that the licensing for each of those platforms and the quality control and all the things it has to go through to get on those platforms is going to cost more than that. Mac, to me, this is an example of a team that potentially already has the money that they need to finish the game, but thought, you know what, we can get some free advertising on Kickstarter. Maybe Two Nerds in a Pod will talk about us. I'm kidding. They probably didn't think that.
Oh, they definitely did. We are big in Utah.
We're mid-sized. I'll have to look up the Utah numbers. They probably figured, you know, if we get our goal met, mm-hmm. and maybe we get some more, then we get some other money to put towards this project, right? I don't mm-hmm. know that they really just needed $2,500 and couldn't finish the game without it, but I think that they probably thought they could get some attention and that they could get a few extra dollars to put towards the project that is already set to come out in April, whether they got $0 or $2,500. That's my thought.
About a third of the whole video game industry was supposedly laid off in 2024 and 2025, in that 2-year span. And I think it's fairly safe to say that like more of that is coming, which is why I think it's more important than ever to support small studios.
Absolutely.
At the same time, we all know that there's a lot of AI slop going on. And that's why I think it's also more important than ever to scrutinize all aspects of people's promises, taking nothing really until you can verify it.
Sure.
There are some things about this that I think are explained very well by what you said, Mr. Nice Guy, that they've probably already got the funding, they've already got the things, that the Kickstarter is more a vehicle to generate hype. And that it's probably going to be released no matter what in August. And, yeah, I think this is the type of game that appeals to me, so I'm very inclined toward it, but also I'm very hesitant because I feel like there's a lot of stuff that I don't know precisely because they may very well have funding secured in other ways, you know?
Yeah, as a positive, because I mean, I kind of scrutinized the pricing. I guess one other criticism I'll say is I think $20 for an indie game at this point, like, people just have to be aware of the market and understand that what you're getting for $40 today is Ark Raiders, Helldivers 2, and ironically, you could probably get a copy of Octopath Traveler for that price. And this game is very, very, I won't say derivative, but similar in design to Octopath Traveler. And so unless you're coming with something that is as high quality as that in the indie space, you should probably be charging a little bit less, especially if that's your first attempt. But that said, it looks really, really good in terms of style, in terms of graphics. It looks smooth. And so I think that they have something here. I just don't know if the price point and the amount they're asking for is in line.
Well, for me, Nice Guy, I did get a little bit of time with the demo, and I think it does look like this is a viable thing to put together. And so I do have some hesitations, but I will say, I would say kickstart for this guy.
You know, I just, on the quality of the game alone, I'm cool with this, but on the business practice, and I don't think that they're like purposely being unethical. I think that they're using Kickstarter in the way that it was designed. And that's something I've been very critical of Kickstarter for a long time. So I can't recommend, in my opinion, that people go support this on that alone. So I'd stay kicked.
And now our Utah numbers have just cratered, Mr. Nice Guy.
Please keep listening, Utah. We love you.
We wish you the best, Deseret Game Studio. And that's been Kicker Kickstart.
Nice. Well, now it's time for Nerdflex. A woo-hoo. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not. If you're here live, you have a job to do. Put a multiple choice gaming related question in the chat. Mac and I will use nothing but our noggins to try to answer it. We also have a test bank of randomly generated questions, not AI generated, but randomly generated. So if you don't have questions, that's okay. Question number one from the test bank. This is a Mario question. A Mario question. Which Mario Kart game does Mario Kart exclaim, "Okie dokie, Mario get you next time"? There's so many Mario Kart games at this point to try to remember that.
I think it's after Mario 64, Mario Kart 64. So I'm going to guess Double Dash, because that's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, and I agree with you, it's after 64, because I don't think they were really talking that much before that game. It was just kind of like, woohoo, and stuff like that. I'm actually going to go Mario Kart 7, Nintendo DS. Or actually, that's called Mario Kart DS. I'm going to go Mario Kart DS.
Sweet, let's do it.
Dude, this is so funny. It's actually Mario Kart 64.
Really?
So we were both wrong. Apparently he was talking.
I wonder if it's one of those things that, like, he says at the screen. Like, you know, when you, like, lose or win. Because I know he definitely says, okie dokie, like, at the select screen.
Right.
But I can't think of when he says, Mario, get you next time.
Yeah, that's tough. I'm going to have to look that up.
You know, I'm going to chalk this up to, we always had people we were playing against and yelling and screaming over
that's
the game.
True.
How dare you with that?
Stop screen watching. That's cheating.
Exactly.
Question number two, Mac. It's a first-person shooter question. From which game would you hear the line, "The devil is real. I know. I built his cage"? This is a great question. From which game would you hear the line, "The devil is real. I know, I built his cave"?
I have not the foggiest idea. I would have guessed something like Devil May Cry or something, but that's not a first-person shooter.
Yeah, and I haven't played like a ton of Duke Nukem. That's a first-person shooter. I'm going to guess it's something like Duke Nukem or, oh, what's that other game? Bulletstorm or something like that. Like almost like 80s like style corny, you know, where someone would say a line like this. I'm going to go with Bulletstorm. Do you have a guess or should we just... Should we just go for
Let's just go for it.
Mac, this is one that you actually could have known. It's Doom 3.
Interesting.
Because you've played some Doom games, right?
I've never played Doom 3, but I have played some Doom games. Of course, back in my day, Doom didn't have talking, really.
All right. Well, let's come up with our last question. This is a great one that I don't know the answer to as well. Zelda, what happens when you place a bomb next to a gossip stone? What happens when you place a bomb next to a gossip stone?
I might believe,
go over three today.
I believe in Ocarina of Time, if you place a bomb next to a gossip stone, it like rockets off like a spaceship.
My guess, just based on the name, was going to be that it gives you a clue. But I don't think that Zelda really had mechanics like that. Like you always had kind of like a guardian, like a Navi or something, giving you advice. So I'm not going to guess that. I'm going to go with what you said, Mac. Let's go for it.
Okay.
Dude, it takes off like a rocket.
Yeah!
You got it. Okay, so we're 1-for-3 today. That has been Nerdflex.
Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I am not a lawyer, and I'm especially not a lawyer in the UK, but there are some barristers over there that are doing some good work. And in that vein, the UK Court of Appeals ruled very recently that MMO currency can be, in fact, treated as property, and that the theft of digital currency can be considered criminal theft. We are short on time. So, nice guy, let's step through the case real quick. And there's this dude named Lakeman, right?
Yep.
Dude was a developer working on RuneScape content. He had no role in managing player accounts and wasn't authorized to access player accounts. But he used the credentials from one of the account recovery team people to access almost 70 accounts, 68 specifically, of players that had tons of RuneScape gold. And because he gained that access that he shouldn't have had, he transferred the money from those 68 people, transferred a bunch of that RuneScape gold to himself, and then sold that gold online for Bitcoin and other real currencies.
Unbelievable.
He stole 705 billion,
billion?
In RuneScape gold. Yeah, billion. And then with the sales of it, he pocketed about 750 million in US dollars, closer to half of a million British pounds. So obviously Lakeman loses his job. But then the lawsuit comes around, and when it comes to this lawsuit, right, the argument that he brings up in court is, you can't come after me for theft because in-game currency isn't actually property, which, in a lot of jurisdictions, is the law. However, I'm going to quote here from the original judgment that said, yes, Lakeman, you're good. RuneScape Gold isn't actual property. They can't come after you.
Okay.
This is what the original judge said. Quote, gold pieces within RuneScape are not sufficiently rivalrous to be classified as intangible property. One gold piece is the same as any other, and their supply is infinite. The fact that existing players have wealth does not preclude new players from joining the game and getting more wealth without taking it from existing players. This means, in my judgment, the offenses currently charged are not made out in law. So, the court initially said, hey, that's the thing, you're right, this isn't real property.
What?
Lom, I'm going to put you on the spot. If you can think of any property that someone might have that is intangible, anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, we're on the topic of digital stuff, Bitcoin, skins in Counter-Strike.
Sure.
Those stickers that we get during Steam sales that can be sold, all that type of stuff.
Sure, sure. Even like the ideas or the expressions of a specific video game, intellectual property. Sure, there's all kinds of intangible property, but the court was like, yeah, RuneScape Gold doesn't really count.
I just gotta say super quick, like the judge's rationale there is absolutely ridiculous.
Okay.
Because it sounds like what they were saying is you can make money without stealing it. So it's okay that you stole it.
Yeah, that like...
But there's literally a market for it. So anyway, please continue.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting because in theory, the RuneScape people could have just given those people all that gold back into their account.
Right.
So it is interesting, but I'll carry on because I think you'll like where it landed at the appeals court. So like we were saying, we know that there are things and precisely... probably an unintended side effect of the NFT and cryptocurrency of the 2020s is that the legal profession has been grappling with the concept of purely digital property for a few years now and was kind of ready to take in-game cash a bit more seriously. So I'll quote from the appeals court, quote, "Gold pieces in RuneScape are not what we would call pure knowledge. Functionally, they exist as identifiable assets distinct from the code which gives rise to them and outside of the minds of other people. There is no good policy reason for exempting them from the category of property which can be stolen. On the contrary, they are assets which have an ascertainable monetary value and which may be traded for that value both in the game and outside the game. Within the rules of the game, they represent money's worth as the product of purchase of a bond. Outside of the game, they are regularly traded for money's worth. They are capable of being subject to dishonest dealing, which deprives their possessor of their use and value. It would be surprising and unsatisfactory if such dishonest dealing did not amount to the offense of theft. Gold pieces within the old school RuneScape game are property which can be subject to the offense of theft." And so now Lakeman, who was originally charged in 2022 with this theft, is going to be... That was a threshold question. Before this lawsuit could even get through the door, they had to really grapple with, hey, can in-game currency actually be stolen? Is it property? And now, at least in the UK, it seems like the answer is yes. So now Lakeman... It will proceed with Lakeman being charged with his half a billion, three quarters of a billion in theft. And if I hear more, I'll let you know. But that's some legalese for us today.
It's wild to me. It's wild to me that they don't even mention the fact that he stole someone's credentials to get access to other people's account. Like, that's online theft. So, to me, that's an issue as well.
I can almost guarantee you that was 100% one of the reasons why he was fired. That, like, that exceeding authorization in a computer system by stealing somebody else's credentials definitely got him fired. And if he challenged his firing, I'm sure that they would point to that as criminal activity and got him bounced. But yeah, this, and who knows, maybe there will be some of that conversation taking place later on. Maybe it'll be like, oh, you committed this crime in furtherance of another crime. We'll see how it plays out. But like, it's kind of cool. You know, RuneScape Gold is property.
Man, I wish I had the time and the energy to get into an MMO. They're so awesome. Like,
agreed.
Well, Mac, thank you for that. We're going long today, which it's fine. It's our podcast. We can do what we want.
Yeah.
But let's wrap it up. Before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms. Mac, what have you been watching and playing, sir? Chat, what have you been watching and playing?
Well, I have been... We lost the great Catherine O'Hare recently, so I've been rewatching Schitt's Creek in honor of her lately. As for playing, I'll probably talk more about that next week. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yep.
Mostly just that. I also watched an interesting technology connections video on solar power on YouTube, which was quite fun to watch. But But yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to. What about you, dude?
Yeah, do you know she was in, Catherine O'Hara was in The Last of Us as well?
I did not.
In the TV show.
Oh.
Yeah, she's in like at least one or two episodes of the TV show.
That's really cool.
And did a phenomenal job. So as far as watching, we're doing our rewatch of Stranger Things and enjoying that. As far as playing, Mac, it's interesting. I would say of all the handhelds that I own, Mac, my favorite consistently tends to be the Analog Pocket. There's something about how brilliant it is in its simplicity, and I can't really put words to it. The nostalgia factor is just there. And so what I've been playing is I've been playing a lot of Analog Pocket. I've been playing a lot of Bonk's Adventure, which is a game that I wanted for a long time, and I finally found it maybe a year ago, and I've really been enjoying it. So I've been playing that. I actually logged into my Xbox Series X and got Black Ops 1 up and running. And that was a huge nostalgia hit. Like, that was 2010 when that came out. And there's still people playing it. My first Call of Duty, played some of that and had an absolute blast. And then got a game of Ark Raiders in. Mac, that's it for me. Why don't you take us home, sir?
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for coming out and being a part of the show. Remember that most Mondays at 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central is when we start on twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod. And if you play your cards right, you could be here for the live recording. But if you're listening to us after the fact or here with us live, we still appreciate you. Thank you for coming out and being a part of it. We hope that until we see you next time, you'll remember that the most important thing you can do, be excellent to each other. And keep it nerdy, y'all. Bye.
Deuces. Love y'all. Bye.